Welcome to the next episode of the Beach Court Podcast. I'm Eric Ridgway, joined by Parker Greenwald and Max Corcoran. We're back with another episode of Teach by the Beach, episode number 2. Got some good stuff for you today about prepping for upcoming tournaments. Of course, we'll touch on the special event results from Utrecht this weekend, and we'll take some look at City League results in Japan because we're full in testing mode last night. It was great. We got Parker. We got him free man for a couple of hours last night, and I kept him out till 1 a.m. testing last night. Parker, how you feeling? You tired from that?
I'm not too tired from that. I'm a little bit more tired about my drive. I was at about, I think at about exactly 10 a.m. I set sail for Melbourne and then to Orlando and then to Winter Park and been all over Florida today. And
I get everywhere, man. I get it.
Parker is back right now just to record the Beach Court Podcast. He could be sleeping, but no, instead, he's here with us for the next X number of minutes.
Yes.
Hugging it out.
Maddox, how's testing going for you right now? And what's coming up for you?
Things are going well. I mean, it's been like, testing and when I'm like uncomfortable with testing or not really sure what's good, then it's just, going to League Cups, trying to grind something out, put myself in a good position for EYC. Eric and I are going to the Big 3 K Cup in Georgia this weekend. So if you're listening and it's the weekend, then maybe we're even on stream winning our winning in or winning finals and winning some moolah.
Oh, they have a stream. That's right.
They do have a stream and they got commentators. So unofficial shout out for that. And also, I mean, this weekend, actually, there's a bunch of good content this weekend. There's the Win Condition Games 3K. Yep. And then there's the NRG versus Lawson Kitchen charity match. Like, just a bunch of great content this weekend.
Not to mention, everyone has pre-releases this weekend. Exciting. We got new set. Get our cards on the new set. Our hands on the new set. What's the over-under for Buddy Poffin on pre-release price? I'm going to set it at like $3 over-under.
So pre-release, like purely before like its actual release date.
Yeah, like next week if you want to buy it, over or under $3.
$3.20.
You're going over?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what TCG player is going to say. I know, guarantee, if you go to a pre-release this weekend, there'll be some sweaty player, maybe us, that'll say, "Hey, I'll give you $5 for that Buddy Poffin," and just take our buying him for $5. He's going to drop like $20. Hey, I got my play set. We're all set. I can get rid of these proxies, and we're all set to go.
Yo, can we sell our VIP passes right now? Yeah.
No, you're still going to use them
for that Poffin.
Nah, no one will do that yet. Unless you're going to Vancouver, in which case, play 4 VIP in your deck, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, we do have Vancouver coming up. There's also an event in Brazil next weekend. Or is that this weekend? Hold on.
I think it's next, but I could just be totally wrong.
If only there was a resource that if you're getting more into the game, you could use to check upcoming tournaments.
It is actually this coming weekend in Brazil. So maybe we'll see more Tord piles. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about those results later. But right now, it's time to get in our second episode of Teach by the Beach. Episode 1 went really well. Thanks for all the positive feedback, people that were listening, and I'm really glad you're able to get something from it. We hope you get a lot from this episode. We kind of did a really good planning, and today's episode is focused around prepping for a competitive tournament. So last episode, we talked about how to get involved with the game, Twitch viewers kind of like learn about the game. Now you've decided, all right, I enjoy the game, but I want to go play in a competitive tournament, and I want to do well, and I want to get better, right? So that's what this episode is geared towards. So the first topic is about taking steps to get better. You decided, you got your Pokemon event, you got your locals, you're going, but you're just getting beat up every week. You got your little Chen Pao deck and you're just getting bodied.
Why is Chen Pao catching strays, bro?
Chen Pao just won a regional like 3 weeks ago, man.
But you got little Timmy in the back, got his little starter deck, and you just want to take your game to the next level. So how do you do that? Personally experience with this, just outwork your opponents, man. Like, the more you practice and the more work you put into the game, the better you will be. If you just kind of listen to us and don't practice at home, by yourself or even with your friends, you're not going to get better. So like, get into that mindset first of outworking your opponents and putting those efforts into those games. If you do that, you'll see that you're going to get better easily. find a like-minded friend. I'm so lucky to have Maddox and Parker, finding them, and, you know, especially Maddox last year and Parker last year, you know, grinding for worlds, right? We had that like-minded goal. And when you surround yourself with people that want to kind of do the same thing you do, they bring out the best in you, right? You know, I look at the pairings round one, I'm like, Maddox, I'm like, oh God, I play you at home all the time. But, you know, it's a different environment when we get paired at locals, right? So I'm actually thankful for it. And just playing more games IRL. Yes, TCG Live is a resource. Yes, Pokemon simulators are a resource. But just, again, playing the real cards will make you better, because there's skills that are involved in the trading card game, like prize checking, things like that, that you cannot really do well when you're playing online. And it's very different. And then the last thing you do, just like easy tech, you know, steps, is consume more content like this podcast, Beach Court Podcast, sub down below. Yeah, all those things, right? So focus on, you know, consuming as much content as you can, playing as many games as you can, and just working hard. But yeah, those are just some easy steps you can take to get better. Boys, what about you? When did you go from like, I'm going to have fun playing Pokemon, to I want to be really competitive? What made you do that, and what steps you take?
Well, for me, I've always been a pretty competitive person, and I went to my first league, and I found two pretty like-minded individuals that, you know, at the time, it was just me and him, my buddy Jason, that wanted to be pretty competitive, and like, we went to a bunch of city championships and stuff, and I think I topped like literally one out of like the eight we probably went to, and like I was on top of the world. He top aided one, I remember, with like a pretty new deck, so he got like a bit of hype for that, and you know, that little like boost right there, it helped us a lot, I think. And no, I only got like 26 points or something the first season I played, but like I was like, hey, you know, that's not bad.
Yeah, I know for me, it was really that I was having fun, you know, playing these different decks, but then was preparing for regional, you know, decided, hey, I'm going to go to a regional, went to Orlando regionals back in 2023, and really just saying, hey, I want to be ready for this one. I want to, you know, take what I've been having fun with at locals and just really show up and perform at a high level and know what I wanted to do. So, you know, I thought I was preparing for that. You know, it really, you know, now, you know, with a lot of time later, you realize that sometimes I wasn't the best prep, but even with the prep that I was doing, I was able to squeeze into a day two, be like, oh man, I made day two. That's such a cool accomplishment. And then did absolutely terrible in day two once I was playing enough players who knew what they were doing and had been doing this for a while. So it,
you mean
it definitely,
the list
like,
with like not four quick ball wasn't good.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, list. With, I mean, just it was the definition of just Mew high rolling. But I mean, but after that, seeing, hey, okay, here's that day two finish, or here's that glimpse of success and not quite getting the result that I wanted. It was really just taking that extra time to say, hey, I want to try to outwork, and I want to try to, you know, do coaching and just continue to perform at a high level. So really dove further into the game after that first regional performance to get coaching, learn more about the matchups, you know, learn my lines, learn about sequencing, and just all that experience to then start, you know, doing better at regionals and kind of continuing that streak. And really just kind of kept at it. I'm a competitive person as well. It's been fun to compete and to have a passion that I've enjoyed when I was a kid, and now be playing it, you know, seriously as an adult and traveling around and, you know, playing the circuit. So it's been a fun time.
Yeah. Yeah, I know for me, it was going to cool stuff every Thursday and getting whooped every week, literally every week, just at the bottom tables. And like, what am I doing wrong? And it's like, you know, just playing not competitive decks. And we'll get into deck building later and kind of what you can do to fix that. But that was kind of what got me. And then I went to my first regional in Arlington, Texas, and I was right there. You know, I had two winning ends today too, and that drove me. That hunger like really got me after missing day two. So again, just those competitive vibes. I really enjoy the game. So let's jump to the next topic about resources to get prepared for a tournament. You know, and Parker, I think, you know, once we get towards the end of this topic, like, you could probably really hit home on this, that I think when you picked up the game, there was a lot less, you know, resources available.
Oh, yeah.
To get better, you know, deck lists were a lot more hidden. They were hard to find. Top players weren't really sharing their thoughts, trying to make the game better, because Of course, they just want to remain the top players, right? Yes, there is some of that still, but we do want to make everyone better, because when everyone's better, we're all better, right? And it brings out the best in all of us. So I'll start sharing my screen. So for those of you that are listening on Spotify or something that's not YouTube, I will try to walk you through this as much as possible. But for those of you on YouTube, I am now sharing my screen. And I'll run through some of the resources that we think are very important and just highlight some key features. We won't be able to go through everything. If you have any specific questions about any of these resources, don't hesitate to reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at RidgewayTCG, Parker's at SquintPTCG, and Maddox is at MaddoxTCG. So if you have any questions, hit us up there or on the YouTube comments and we'll give you a response. But the first website I'm showing is Limitless TCG. I think we touched on this a little bit last week about how you can play online tournaments on this website and go through that. But this website is very pivotal to your success. It will have all the tournament results. So you just kind of come the homepage. From the homepage, you just click on tournaments. And this is literally where you can come and find all of the deck lists from all of the day two decks from those tournaments. And you can literally just rip the deck here and go practice them. There's even like in specific tournaments, you know, if you're prepping for, you know, Orlando or EUIC or, you know, right now Vancouver, you can come out to Utrecht and say, okay, let me look at the statistics. Okay, day two, here's Gardevoir is the most popular deck in day two. And I want to take it a step further and just say, all right, what cards is Gardevoir playing right now? Okay, you know, a good portion of them are playing an average of one Avery across 15 players. There's an average of one Curlia, so that means everyone's playing Mirage Step Curlia. There's just a lot of good data here for you to use in this website. And it goes even further down to the decks tab. There's a lot of metagame information here, which we'll jump into in a minute, and I'll come back to this. So that's Limitless. Again, kind of poke around out here, ask any questions. Any other key features you want to highlight before I move to the next one, guys?
Yeah, I got a question. Did you see that Ralts was 3.93 and not 4? So there was somebody that didn't play 4 Ralts in their deck.
Heck yeah. Let's find out who it is. All right, who do you think it is? Which one of these guys?
We can't click through 15 lists.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. But somebody that's pretty gangster.
That is indeed gangster. Well, they could have played the other Ralt, right?
Oh, maybe that is true.
But it's not.
I mean, ultimately, the cool part about Limitless is just wealth of information. And there's been so many times where you can just go to Limitless and say, okay, well, what are the lists playing right now? You can pull up the most successful lists. You can see, you know, all the day two lists and just really have this wealth of knowledge and of data to look at and see, okay, has anyone seen success with playing this card? Oh, this card does not have a Limitless entry. Maybe it's not that great, or maybe we haven't found the right combination of cards for it yet. It's a really fantastic resource and one that we all use almost every time we're playing Pokemon.
Yeah, I mean, they even have like a cool proxy printer, which we'll get to. Justin Basil has one. We'll get to his site as well. But they have a proxy printer on here that you can literally just go in here and, you know, add cards. If you don't have any VIP passes at home, you know, to build an extra deck, you can just literally come in here and add a bunch of VIPs and print this. And this is a very vital resource to deck building. You don't have to have all the cards to build a deck. You could literally just print these cards out, put a basic energy card in there, and put this over it.
Rainbow rare.
Yeah, or your favorite rainbow rare. EX.
Exactly. Yeah, especially when there's a new format or you're just trying out new pieces, you can print the cards. You don't have to buy them until you go to an official tournament and want to play it. At least gives you a chance to practice with the printed proxies before then deciding if it's a card you want to use and purchase.
Yeah, so moving on to the next resource that's very important for Pokemon players is Arcanine Labs. This website is important because this is where you will find all of your registration information. So you'll want to create an account, sign in if you already have one. And once you're signed in, that's where you can go and kind of find out all the tournament information, see what you're registered for under your registrations. But all registrations for Pokemon tournaments that are not your local events, so any regional championships, international special events, things like that. All done through Arcanine Labs. And you can follow them on Twitter and they will post information for you.
Bro, 3,100 registered.
Yeah, is that, yeah, it's gonna, that's across all divisions, right? So
Parker, it is, yeah, but
for those of you
God.
Listening on Twitter or sorry, on Spotify, there's 31
podcasts on Twitter now.
Yeah, I know. There's the full
hour video on Twitter.
I think you can do that.
You actually. Could, yeah.
On your player, retweet if you're watching this on Twitter. Thanks.
On your player dashboard, it'll show the number of registered players for a tournament. This is for your game, so TCG, and it's across all divisions, seniors and juniors included. But you know, you can just subtract like 600 and say there's going to be 2,500 people in London. There's going to be 2,100 people in Orlando minimum. So it just gives you a good idea kind of going in tournament, like how large a tournament is. When you say you're scared of Snorlax, just remember it's 2% of the room.
I was going to say that's 600 people, but that's not the correct math.
That's not the correct math.
That's 62 people.
All right, so moving on to the next one. PokeStats Live is also a great resource for you. This is where you can track your tournament matchups and results. So if I want to come out here and I want to see how Maddox is doing lately, I can go click on this and go to his page, and it'll show me all of Maddox's results. And I can even follow people on here. So even if you don't go to tournaments, but your friends go to tournaments and you want to follow up with them, how they're doing on the day of the tournament, you can create an account and follow them and then refresh the site and it'll show you how they're doing in real time. So for example, if I want to see how Maddox made it to third place in Portland, what matchups did he hit? You know, I can click on that tournament and go match by match to see what he played against. You know, most everything is shown here on PokeStats. Not all matchups are known, but this is very important because, you know, you may look at a deck and say, how the heck is Mew VMAX doing when there's Charizard and Moon and yada yada? And you look at this and you're like, oh, he only played two Charizards and no Moons. You know,
yeah,
round five was a
waxed.
Moon.
Oh.
Which
he
I also
waxed won. Those matchups though.
Round five was what, Maddox?
Round five was a Roaring Moon.
Round five was Roaring Moon. Okay, right.
But again, 2-0-1 against Roaring Moon and Zard. I'm just saying. Maybe I was on a heater. Maybe they didn't know what Genesect does. Who knows for sure? So.
But yeah, so like it's just very important because like you'll look at a deck that does well and you're like, oh, well, they really won the matchup roulette. Sometimes that is the case. But sometimes it is that they played well, right? And that's usually more the case. Another site that I like to use is in the PokeStats branch. PokeStats, not live, just regular PokeStats.
PTCG stats.
Yeah, PTCGstats.com. I really like this site because if you go from the homepage, you click on major event data and then go to like the most recent tournament. Once you're on the actual tournament, at the very bottom for the VODs, so like if it was streamed, there's a link directly showing you how to get to where a matchup is. So let's say you're a Gardevoir player and you want to watch how to play against Charizard. You can come out here and just go straight to a matchup that was Gardevoir Zard on stream and not have to sift through other results. So those are some cool things I like about this site. There's a lot of other cool things. Again, these are just some sites that we like. I've got a couple more to get through, so I'll move on a little bit. Pokey Cub Book is another one. So
limited plan.
Yeah, pokeca book.com. This is a Japanese website that does pay, give us early Japanese results. So you can come to the site, you can translate it to English. But right here on the main page, it's Pokemon TCG decks. You can just click here and it will show you results for your favorite archetype. So if you want to look at Future Box list, you can click on Future Box and come in here and see all the Future Box lists that are doing well. And you can also do this on Limitless under the City Leagues tab under tournaments now, and we'll get through that a little bit later too.
Tina.
Lost Tina. Back. Tina's back, baby.
Tina never left.
Also shout out to the Gudra legend.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Espathra legend.
Bro, chill.
Espathra, wait, Espathra's Attu one of the City League?
Yeah. All right, so
yes, sir.
Let's keep moving. We'll come back to City League results later. We'll spend some time on that. PokeBeach is a website. I don't have it pulled up, but PokeBeach is a website just for Pokemon trading card game news. They're always up to date. If you're a collector, that's a good site for you to kind of keep up on the news as well. All right, so I've got three more to get through. So Justin Basil, I mentioned him earlier and his site. Thank you, Justin. This is a great site. So once Antoine Boulay translates a card from Japan when it gets dropped, the next place to go is justinbasil.com. You need to go to the What's Next section. And under What's Next, you could find for Temporal Forces, you can find the set list. They'll have the full set list here. And then what's important for most people is the selected proxies. And you can, again, this is another place where you can come and print proxies. So I really like this. Just gives us a way to kind of print cards in English and use them. I have two more things. I'll touch on the first one. This is a simulator. So this is PTCG Sim. Dot online. This is a very good site. If you don't find any like-minded friends, or if you're bored and just want to kind of solitaire against yourself, which this podcast highly recommends, you could do it on here by there's a tutorial when you log in. It's a pretty good site. You can flip back and forth. You can play as both players. There's some hot commands that you can learn and things like that. And we're not going to walk you through how to play it, but basically I can come in here, and if I want to KO this Mew, I can play Pokemon Catcher. I can flip heads, and then this guy can be knocked out because we love killing Mew VMAX on this podcast.
Is that what Pokemon Catcher does?
First of all, didn't gust. Second of all, not a VMAX. Third of all, no energy.
Yeah, loser.
Look. See,
we just pulled an energy out of the prizes. That's not even a knockout. 70 times, anyways.
All right. Cut the podcast.
No, but for real, this is a great site to practice with it. You know, there is no flashy animations like PTCG Live where it'll automatically complete things for you. So it's very manual. So make sure that you're very comfortable with what the cards are and what they do in order to go and play it. But honestly, it's a great tool recently released. And it's been a great time.
Yeah, and speaking of recently released, as in just a couple of days ago, this was
J.W. Creewall.
J.W., thank you. I was blanking on his name. J.W. Creewall made this, and basically he wants the ability to kind of track your results. So when you're testing, you know, being able to see, like, oh, this beats this, this beats that. I'm not logged in here. I don't have it, but counterplay.gg is a new website that just came out where you can enter in your results. You could have, you know, Parker, hey, track your results for me. Maddox, track your results for me. And we can all put it in one site under one login and have a good database of information to work from. So like last night, Parker, you know, we played what, four games of Zard, and you won three or two, something
yeah,
like that.
I won three.
And you won three. So you go like, Parker won three with Zard against, you know, Future Box. And so in the matchup column, it would say Zard 75% favored into Future Box based on our data, right? So,
which don't use four games of data.
Yeah, don't use four. I think the minimum is 10, but you probably want to be closer to 20 to 30.
You want to be closer to 1,000.
Yeah, well, we're not getting 1,000.
I mean, the highest number of games you can get is great. You know, if you have time to play 10,000 games per EUIC, one, you're a legend and will probably win EUIC, and two, would recommend.
Do it. So. Yeah. Anyway, so that was a lot of resources we went through. You know, get out there, get your hands on them. Boys, what's your favorite? What do you like to use to get most prepared for a tournament?
For me, I gotta just say Limitless. I mean Limitless and PokéStats Live. Literally, when I go to create a new Google Chrome tab on my phone, the ones that are automatically pop up is like Limitless. Play Limitless and what I just say, PokéStats Live and an RK9. So like those are the ones that I'm always going to. There's so many times when I want to see, hey, how did this last tournament go? What lists went well? Or I'm talking with someone or playing a game, says, hey, what do these lists play these days? And I say, oh, hey, let's just pull it up. Or I'll try to say, oh, hey, what list do we want to try building? Oh, let me just pull up the most successful Arctina list from from City League or the most successful Los Gudra list or whatever it may be. So again, I mean, just a valuable resource to be able to pull up those lists so easily. And also even just saying like, like how many weird decks of Tord has Tord played? And you just scroll his Limitless page, see what different results there are. So again, that's the one that I'm using literally all the time.
Parker, what about you? What's your favorite?
Mine's Limitless. Definitely like it. Like I don't know, PokéStats is like I use PokéStats. One of the first tournaments I think PokéStats was like usable for was Hartford, and I used it to get an idea of what my opponents were playing. But if it had like an easier access for like deck lists on PokéStats, which like that website already does more than enough, but like it would probably be my number one. But just the deck lists, like I know what I want to put in a deck, but like sometimes, you know, I don't have the time or I need to focus my energy elsewhere on like another deck or something, but I need this deck to like play test against. Just pulling up Limitless, finding that deck, just throwing it together. It's the easiest way.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think Limitless is one of the best. I really love Justin Basil just because I want to be able to print the cards and play with the new ones when they're coming out. Cause like, you know, I've been focused on Europe probably for a month now. So can't do that without proxies. You know, I don't really like having drawn on or written on, you know, a piece of energy card. Cause it's very tough to find it when you're deck searching if it's not the actual card.
For me specifically, the amount of times I've just written rod on a fire energy. Like, oh, it's
I'm
super
like,
rod,
bro,
obviously.
Where's the rod? Like, I can't find it. So moving on, last topic I'll cover before the boys jump in and give some more of their thoughts on some different topics is metagaming. So what is metagaming? What do I mean when I say metagaming? By definition, metagaming is a game about a game. So we're trying to play Pokemon cards and be the best that we can be. So basically, it's like trying to get inside your opponent's brains while they're at home and not getting ready to, like, they're getting ready to play, right? So it's like, okay, you look at the results of something and you see, oh my God, Charizard's 50% meta share. It's doing really, really good right now. Okay, what's Charizard weak to? It's weak to water. Sorry, it's weak to grass. Excuse me, my brain. It's weak to grass. And okay, what grass attackers are good that I can tech into my deck, right? You have a fighting deck. You can't attack with a grass attacker. Sometimes you can, right? You know, you have to fit some things in. You know, for example, in my area, we have some players in our area that just love Goldango, and it's a good deck. And, you know, but Goldango is weak to fire. Sorry, Abby. So we put, you know, Radzard in our list so we can have a single prize attacker to kill a Goldango in our area. We've got a couple of people that like to make it rain. You know, so just kind of like see what lists are doing well. Like, pay attention to your locals every week. You know, if you've got this guy Maddox at your locals that plays Mew VMAX every week, probably
play
put a Drapion in your list.
Mm-hmm. 4 of them, actually.
Did you guys see there was a Snorlax list that played 2 Drapions in Utrecht?
Jesus criminy.
Honestly, pretty good call.
Valid.
Valid. So yeah, like if there's a weakness across the meta as a whole, like Guardian and Mew are both weak to dark, then you know you can tech in a dark attacker to take advantage of those matchups. So just I think another thing, Maddox, that you called out previously is if meta decks like previously Charizard was not playing switch cards or a way to get out of the active, and Lugia saw this problem for a while too when it was really relevant. If your deck, you know, doesn't play switch cards, then maybe Paralysis can be really good. You know, it could even win you the game. It could buy you that turn you need, you know. So think about things like that. Just kind of inside the game, get inside their brains and figure out how can I play chess and get down the road and think ahead of what they're thinking. You know, it's Maddox's day, you know. He's been saying this since day one. Well, you know, Mew just won, so people will put in Drapion. So, you know, Fusion Mew's good, you know, or whatever you're saying that you like to do, Maddox. It's like, all right, well, because of this that happened with Mew, Fusion's good because of this. DTE's good, you know, yada yada.
There's like some of those factors there, right? If a card is seeing success, then people play tech cards to that. But then maybe try to get a step ahead and say, okay, well, if Mew's doing well, some more people play Mew, then maybe a card that stops Mew, such as Spirit Tomb, is a little better positioned. However, if too many people play Spirit Tomb, then it's going to be worse to play Mew, so people won't play Mew. But then if people aren't playing Mew, then maybe you shouldn't play Spirit Tomb. And if people aren't playing Spirit Tomb, then maybe you should play Mew. So I mean, but and while you can get cyclical with these thoughts, it's really just kind of analyzing and saying, you know, and trying to make a call based off of, you know, I think that a lot of decks aren't respecting, again, like Paralysis, you know, Gardevoir and Charizard were not playing any switching cards. So decks like that were very exploitable to things like a Mawile Lock or Snorlax Stall, or Paralysis, which is why cards with those techs included or cards based around that have been able to do well in this past format.
Right. So what about you guys? What's some metagame calls that you've made or some decisions you've made, you know, related to metagame?
I played Virizion Genesect at an expanded regional, which was way, way past its time. Like, I think the power creep had pretty much sealed it out, but I was expecting to hit a lot of the Archie Blastoise deck, which, yes, it could have just killed you on turn one, or the Seismitoad deck. And I did hit a couple of them, but I did not have that performance. I hit the one person playing like a blacksmith, just random fire pile, like the one person in the room while I was four two or something. So I ended my dream, but yeah. I used to do that. I used to play decks for too long just because I liked them, but yeah, it's like, that one was a like meta call. Oh, I'm expecting a lot of these.
No, I mean, and picking up another grass type attacker. I mean, lately, again, I've been playing a lot of Fusion Mew and Mew in general, but there's been a good number of Roaring Moon players in the area. So, and that's kind of a trickier matchup. So I started to try to list, actually saw from Andrew Gantner, who was playing a 1-1 Acelgor line. We've seen the Fusion Strike Acelgor pop in, but this is just including a grass type attacker that can one hit KO a Roaring Moon and really just helps make the matchup a little easier. They can't leave the Acelgor around or else it'll just KO them back. So you kind of force them to have to take a single prize as opposed to taking a three prize on your VMAXs. So a card like that, you know, I've been trying out lately or just different ways like that to play around my local meta specifically.
Yeah, one of my favorite ones that I've done was in Milwaukee. I played Zapdos V in my deck because...
Galarian Zapdos,
yeah. Yeah, Galarian Zapdos V. And the reason why is because I was playing Skystone in my deck because I wanted a free matchup against Mew with the Drapion. And the Skysteel Stone won me so many games with Zapdos, taking, you know, four prizes on a Regieleki VMAX or three prizes against Arc. It was mostly in there for Arc decks. And you know, there was a lot of Arc that tournament. I hit a couple of them and that card pulled its weight, you know, in that Lost Box. And sometimes, you know, Lost Box is definitely one of those decks you want to be like looking for those techs, right? The Tropius and the super effective classes with the mini ore, you know, there's so many cool combos that Lost Box has done. And those are meta games. And look no further than Tord's deck last weekend at Utrecht, was a meta call. Like, I mean, really like. And we'll get into that deeper later, but his deck was kind of a meta call. But Lex, let's move into deck building. Parker, kick us off, man.
Yeah, so to play Pokemon, you need to build a deck. And building a best deck is hard. I am kind of under the assumption that there is no perfect deck. There's really not like a perfect deck that's ever existed. I mean, maybe like Haymaker back in base set, but like modern day cards are too good, you know, like it's kind of, you know, what matchups am I gonna hit, what is that? But one thing you should never take away from your deck building, no matter what it is, is consistency. Pokemon is a game of consistency. Sometimes you will win games just because your deck worked, your opponents didn't. And having high consistency is going to help you to at least play your games, which is very important.
Yeah, you can't win a game if you can't play a game.
Exactly. And Sadly, there are times with no matter how consistent your deck may look or feel, like sometimes you'll just brick, but you want to minimize the chances of that happening as much as you can. You want your deck to have, but now there's a lot of good draw supporters. So there's tons and tons of decks, or not draws, like support Pokemon. There's tons and tons of decks that play Bibarel, especially going like post rotation. There's like a lot of decks have Bibarel in it. That's just a solid card. It helps you against like late game Ionos and stuff. So, and it helps you just see more of your deck. You want to have the right amount of supporters, like generally for like lost box decks where, you know, all the comfies basically draw you a card and Greninja draws you cards and this and that. I know they only play four chorus, but like it's allowed to do that because you have this built-in draw engine, and basically the more cards you see, you know, the more cards you chorus, the more cards you get in your lost zone. Eric typically has like a pretty standard rule of thumb when playing not lost box decks, and what was that number you said?
Like 10 to 13, like, you know, especially yeah. Maridon, I'm always targeting like 11 to 13 with Maridon.
Yeah, so you want to have 10 to 13 cards that say draw you cards. And the most popular ones, because they're the most efficient ones, are going to be like Professor's Research. Iono is good at basically every point in the game, unless you're like destroying your opponent, they're bricking out of their mind or something, or stuff like that. But typically, yeah, 10 to 13, 11 to 13 is like a pretty good number to settle on. Some decks, if you have the space, could even play more if all they need to see is like draw cards, basically. It's also trainers that help with that. So like all the searching cards. So like we're losing Battle VIP Pass, which is like a huge, huge loss for a lot of decks. Some other decks, not as much, but that card, just, you know, getting two Pokemon out and like cycling that useless card out of your deck after turn one is just like so, so good. But like you want to have the right amount of search because you need to get Pokemon out. You need to find certain Pokemons at a certain point in the game, so like having the Ultra Balls or Nest Balls or other searching cards like help that tremendously. You just need to have your deck basically do what it does as much as you can. One thing that a lot of newer players and even like people that have been playing for a while are like afraid of for some reason is like being like, oh, you're only good because you play meta, you know, and stuff like that. But like decks are good because they're good. I mean, like there's not really like another way around that. Like some decks, combos and stuff just synergize better or just inherently have a higher power level than, you know, this random EX you pulled out of your box that is shiny or whatever. So that's why, like, you see Charizard and Gardevoir and Mew and all these other decks, like, consistently performing well is just because they're good. They're good decks. One thing that, you know, they were touching on earlier, like tech cards and stuff, like those are event specific for the most part. So like if your deck takes a bad matchup to, let's say, Charizard, like Mew VMAX does, like adding that, what is it, Excelgore could help swing that matchup to where it's more of a 50-50 depending on, you know, player lines and like how they draw and stuff. It becomes more of a 50-50 rather than like a almost unwinnable game if they evolve two Charizards basically. And it's like I don't like the tech or local like stuff. Like you can, like, there's honestly not really anything wrong with it. But I just try to, like I said, play the most consistent thing you can play. Another thing that is kind of like a nervous, not nervous stigma, but like people are afraid of being called is like net decking, which we showed you like Limitless earlier, and how like you just pull lists directly off of there. Basically, you copy it, plug it right into your PTCGL account. You can, you know, copy it, put it right in the proxy maker, or if you just have the cards, you can throw it together yourself. But a good long time player that I haven't seen him recently, but his name's Sam Chen. I was talking to him and I asked him like what his opinion was on the, like, net decking, and he said it's like the best thing you can do, because the deck that, you know, won this event has been like vastly tested. Like, they basically did all the heavy lifting for you. They just played it well at this event, and then, like, it was a good call, or, you know, they drew well, or, you know, they're just insane players too, like Tord with his that deck
Tord pile.
Yeah. But
we've had two Tord piles this year.
yes we have, actually. But yeah, being like net decking, like especially if you're just starting out, 100% the best thing you can do, in my opinion. Obviously, like, that exact 60 might not be the best exact 60 for the next event, so that's just a thing you have to find out with your meta reading. And like, you know, hey, I don't like this card in it, I'm gonna change it for this card because I feel like I need this in more situations. So yeah, just, you know, through playing, trial and error, like, find what you like in the decks and whatnot. But the last thing is just always ask for advice from, you know, anyone, but mostly like friends or players you respect, like you consider good, and, you know, don't be resistant to their ideas.
Yeah, well said. Max, you got anything to add to that?
No, I mean, again, just I think the ability of net decking and just saying, hey, here's a successful list, let me use this as a starting point.
Yeah.
And then continuing to play it more and more and just see how it feels. If it says, hey, you know, this person made this choice, you know, I want to try this choice and just change one card at a time. What if there's one less Iona when I played this other fun supporter? And then you play a few games with that and it says, oh, wow, I can never find Iona when I needed it. I should have, maybe I go back to that. Or maybe you like the change and you keep it. So I think just starting from a good spot there is a great way to, you know, inch your way into deck building. And then eventually, as you get more comfortable and play a bunch of different lists, you say you have a concept for how you want your deck to function. And again, start with those consistency cards and kind of add in your core attackers and what other cards you need to help you win the game.
Now, one of the cool things someone taught me, if you're going to change just one card or something like that, and you're not sure on it, just flip the card, what it was previously, upside down in the sleeve. And that's just basically signifying, when you draw, let's say you're trying to change Iona to a Research, or Research to an Iona, or Iona to an Arvin, whatever it be, right? Flip that Iona upside down, and when you draw it, oh, this would have been Iona. Look at your board state. Is Iona better in this? And just kind of keep that in your head. Is Arvin better here? Is Iona better here? You know, just kind of, that's what I like to do. And another thing I like to do is lay out my decks when I'm seeking advice. So when I lay out my deck and I just stare at it and I look at it, sometimes just something comes to you. The more you think about the deck and just look at it, and people are, you know, when a deck's laid out, you know, people that are around Pokemon, everyone loves looking at decks. So they'll just come over and look at it. And sometimes you'll get, you know, behind you, Joe Schmo will be like, yo, man, what if you put a psychic energy and you just psychic leaped every game? You know, like something cool, right? So, or put a squawk in your deck going to the World Championships. You know, there's so many cool things, right? So, but yeah, thanks for that, Parker, about deck building. So hopefully you guys learned something there. Maddox's next topic is knowing matchups. This is a big one here, and I think you got some good information for to share with us.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, again, so you've built your deck, right? You're taking events more seriously. You've used all these resources to get better. You have your metagame, you have your deck built. Now it's the method of knowing how to play your deck against your opponent's deck. So matchups
as
a whole.
This is like back to that work harder. We're back to work hard, right?
Exactly. I mean, putting time into knowing these matchups. Because, you know, when we talk about a matchup, it says, hey, how does one deck archetype do versus another deck archetype? So say, for example, you have a Chen Pao and you have your Chen Pao deck and you know how it works. You're comfortable with it. But then your opponent flips over a card for their active Pokemon. Just from what they flip over, you should start thinking, okay, they flipped over a Charmander. How do I play this matchup? You know, you should know a little bit about what their deck is going to do and how you respond to that deck and ultimately how you will try to win the game and how they will try to win the game. So when I look at preparing for a matchup, I think of it in four different steps. The first step is you're looking at a matchup. Let's say, again, with our example, Chen Pao EX versus Charizard EX. Step one is, how does my deck operate? So this spot, you should know already. You know, if it's a deck that you enjoy playing, you should know, how does my deck like to operate? I'm Chen Pao. I like to get Baxcalibers and Barbaros into play, draw a bunch of cards, you know, use superior energy retrieval to grab my energy and start taking knockouts. You should know how to do this already from your time playing the game and your preparation on your deck specifically. Step number two is, how does my opponent's deck prefer to operate? So in a case like this, you know, you may or may not be less familiar with the deck. If there's a popular meta deck, for example, in our current Paradox Rift format, a lot of the big decks are Charizard EX, Roaring Moon EX, Gardevoir EX, Chen Pao EX, Maridon EX, and Mewmax, for example. Generally, just you should know how those decks are operating. I also missed Giratina V-Star. Huge deck right now.
That's not a deck.
It's a deck. No, that's a deck. But again, you should know how these decks are operating. So you may learn how these decks operate from watching people play. Maybe you're watching those stream matches or you're just watching in locals. You should also see if you've played against an opponent before. If you're playing your Chen Pao deck and you're playing against a Giratina V-Star deck, then you kind of say, oh, this is how they like to operate. So there's a knowledge that you need to have of your own deck as well as a basic knowledge of your opponent's deck. Again, there are lots of different decks that can be played. So the more that you can extend your knowledge and consume content to see a bunch of different decks performing in different ways, you can start to get an idea of how these all operate. And then it pulls to your knowledge base. Okay, so that was the first two steps. You know how your deck operates. You know how your opponent's deck operates. And now step three is starting to understand the two decks in practice a little bit more. The way I think of this is, how does each deck take six prizes against the other? There's this part here of, you know, thinking, how do I take six prizes in the fewest amount of turns possible? So if you're a Chen Pao EX, for example, against Charizard EX, your quickest route says, hey, if I can take, you know, if I can attack three times, I can win the game. Say I knock out 3 2-prize Pokemon, or maybe even mix in like your Iron Hands and says, I'm going to take a 1-prize knockout, a 2-prize knockout, and a 3-prize knockout. Something like that, you can mix that up and say, I can win this game with 3 attacks, theoretically. So you're thinking about that. What's that fastest route to win that game? You're using the cards that you have available and the attackers in your deck. How will I take 6 prizes against my opponent? How do I prefer to take 6 prizes against my opponent? At the same time, think, how will my opponent take those 6 prizes in order to win the game? If you're a Charizard EX player, again, they like to go a 2-2-2. They can say, I'm going to take a 2-prize knockout, 2-prize knockout, 2-prize knockout. So thinking as you go into the matchup, okay, this is how my opponent is trying to win the game. Here's how I am trying to win the game. Understanding that and finding those different lines, you know, there's different ways to do that. Again, watching past games, I think, is a great example for that. Talking to someone who knows the matchup very well is a great way to do that. If you're the local Chen Pao player and there's a local Charizard EX player, ask to say, hey, when you play against Chen Pao, how do you try to win the game? Those conversations like that can be really valuable.
What are you scared of is also a really good question to ask them.
Exactly. Understanding more of, you know, what they're worried about and those hesitations, you know, and as you get more experience with the game, you can even start to think through these matchups and says, OK, well, this deck typically operates with a lot of 2-prize Pokemon in play. And this other deck attacks with big attackers that can take knockouts on 2-prize Pokemon. So maybe this is how that matchup would go. But back to the point earlier, really, of what to be scared of or what can go wrong in the matchup. This is that fourth and final step. What ways can each of us stop the other person from taking 6 prizes? This is the toughest part of the matchup, really. This is where you find the lines to success or to failure in a matchup. When you're going into an area saying, you know, okay, my Charizard opponent likes to go 2-2-2, take 3 2-prize knockouts. You know, do I have a way to disrupt that prize trade? Is there an area where I can use a single prize attacker or maybe take a multi-prize turn to disrupt that in order to stop the flow of your opponent's natural flow of the game that they want to do? At the same time, do you have your own liabilities and your own weaknesses as a deck that can stop you from taking a 2-2-2? For example, with your Chen Pao, if you're saying, hey, I want to take 3 2-prize knockouts, maybe, you know, you have to know that a key part of that is your support Pokemon, your Barbaros, your Baxcalibur, in order to fuel and give you all the outs to cards that you need in order to take those knockouts. So knowing that oh, you know, while I do have a knockout here, my support board is weak because I don't have another Frigibax down. I don't have another Bidoof down. You can take steps to try to work on those liabilities and try to prepare yourself for that matchup the best you can, knowing the ways that things can go wrong. There are other ways that you can target those support Pokemon, right? Targeting that back Excalibur, a card like Path to the Peak that just shuts off abilities. You can make sure that you have ways to get around those stoppers that will stop you from following your plan. At the same time, you want to try to utilize those stoppers in your deck, if possible, to disrupt your opponent's plan. For example, if a Charizard EX player has a slower start, maybe they'll say, I'll have my two Charmanders down and a Manaphy. If you're a Chen Pao player, you might think, oh, I can't take two prizes here. Oh, wait, maybe I can. Use that cross switcher, canceling cologne. Now you've created a two prize opportunity when you previously only might have had a one prize opportunity. So really, I mean, knowing how your deck plays into another deck is key to success. This is a big part of working to, you know, perform well at your events. Again, thinking how does my deck play against my opponent's deck? You won't exactly know what your opponent's deck will be playing, but going into an event, you want to be able to predict that based off of the metagame, based off of limitless results. How is my deck performing against the top decks in the format right now? So, you know, knowing that matchup is really key to success. You know, that's why net decking or taking an existing list or a winning list isn't the key. It's knowing how to pilot that list most effectively and know how to play it against each different type of deck in the metagame. So again, the more you can play matchups and understand those matchups, the more you'll be able to succeed in those. If you're having trouble with a certain matchup or playing against a certain deck, as tough as it might be, the best way to practice that is to literally just practice the matchup and find a bunch of different ways to lose so you can start finding a bunch of different ways to win.
Yeah, don't be scared of Snorlax. Sit down across from it and play it. Right? Practice against it, right? So
whatever that scary matchup might be.
Whatever you're scared of, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's really good information there. And I think this goes back to my first, you know, intro to this segment was, hey, outwork your opponents. You know, the more you practice a matchup, the better you know the routes. You know, stuff like my ride on, just because, you know, I can come talk about this. Most people know it by now. It's like, all right, if I determine an opponent doesn't have Choice Belt, I'm going Raichu Fast Charge a couple of turns early. All right, so I determined they do have Choice Belt, they don't have Vitality Band. I'm going Maridon attack early, and I'm just going to like chain Maridon attacks and put damage on board, you know, amp later, right, for three. So like, I know that because I've practiced the matchup enough, right, and I've found those lines, and you find them by practicing the matchup. So mm-hmm. can't hone that enough.
Especially if your deck has a naturally tough matchup, I think those are some of the ones that are even the most important to practice.
Yeah.
Like we were kind of talking about earlier, the, you know, Charizard and Moon, tough matchups for Mew VMAX. You know, a lot of times you might give a brand new player a Mew VMAX that can say, oh, there's no way this deck can win. Well, there are ways the deck can win. It's not always, you can't always win the matchup. It's not great, but you have to follow the lines and know the routes that you have to win or to disrupt your opponent from winning the best that you can in order to, you know, succeed and give yourself a chance.
I think mindset goes really hard there too, right? You sit down from that bad matchup. If you've practiced it and you understand your routes to win, your mindset will be better, right? And if you feel good, you play good, and you play good, you pay good, and you pay, you know, all that stuff. Dion, baby.
So right. Speaking of Dion.
Yeah, Dion. Right? One of the best coaches ever, right?
Yeah, I mean, and another way that you can improve your game, again, this is just kind of going back to overall of idea of preparing for that competitive tournament, and another step that someone can take is to get coaching, right? So coaching can come from, you know, any different sources. This could be someone in your local scene that is familiar with the deck or matchup that maybe you want to grow more familiar with, or you can even go to a, you know, online source. You can go to metafy.com and find coaches, or you can even go find those top players. Other players will offer coaching services available for you. So this is an option for people who want to grow their skills at a faster rate. Not necessarily for everyone. There is normally a cost component to it, but for someone who's trying to quickly learn a lot about a specific, learn a lot about the game in a little amount of time, learning in-depth details on a deck or a certain matchup. Again, you know, these are coaches that know these matchups well or know a specific deck very well and can have very valuable information for you. And also, coaching is just great to have just a sit-down conversation with a you know, successful player or a player who's a good deck builder or someone who's done well in your local scene, start to understand a little bit more about how they play the game and what they look for when they're playing and how they approach matches, and that you can take on your own to build your own skills and start to grow that out. So again, right, you can find coaching in multiple different ways. If you have a local player who is, you know, maybe an up and comer or has had a few great finishes at their at regionals or, you know, international championships, things like that, they might even offer coaching. If they have a if there's a player in an area that plays a deck very, very well, they're constantly topping locals or winning cups or challenges with a certain deck, and that's a deck that you play and want to learn more, go talk to them. Say, hey, can we, you know, start to work on these matchups some, or do you offer coaching, things like that? Or again, there are lots of top players that offer coaching through social media platforms such as Medify, things like that. I think overall with coaching, again, it's something that I think can help everyone, but it's not necessarily for everyone. And if you have a bad coaching experience, you know, don't let that deter you. You know, if you're trying to grow in the game and learn things quickly and learn things very efficiently with someone who is a good teacher, coaching, I think, is a great option. There are lots of coaches and different coaching styles, so it's really just finding the right one that lines up for you. So I don't know what the team's experience with coaching here has been. I know for me, I've had a lot of success with coaching, and I've really, really enjoyed it. When I was getting further into the game, kind of like we mentioned earlier in the podcast, when I wanted to dive in and really understand my MuVMax deck that I was playing, I found one of the top players who was playing MuVMax with success and innovating with it a lot. This was Xander Perot in this case. So I had coaching sessions with him leading up to my next regional, saying, I really want to understand how this deck works. I want to have a list that is tested by someone who knows this deck very well and has done a lot of testing into it already, and start to learn how to pilot that deck effectively. And also in that, not only learning the deck, but just picking up lots of game knowledge of how to best approach and what's proper sequencing, proper actions, how to find your lines and how to limit your liabilities at the same time. So, you know, I think coaching is a huge success. You can do one-on-one coaching or even group sessions. There's lots of different avenues for it now. Eric Parker, what's your past experience with coaching been like, and did you find it helpful?
I have never personally gotten coaching. So when I started playing, it wasn't a thing. It just like, the best form of information when I was playing was like paid articles. So like people would, you know, hey, I top 8 of this event. This is what I did. Here's the matchup spread. Here's what I did in those matchups. But you'd have to pay for all of them. Whereas like now people write them themselves. They have, you know, deck recaps, you know, event recaps that they just spill everything on video, which it's a lot easier now to like get that information. But yeah, when I started playing, there was maybe like a handful or less, and like I didn't even know about it unless like they posted in Verbank or something. One thing that I do kind of miss, one of my buddies, he doesn't really play anymore, and pop up for like one locals like once or twice a year. His name's David. He like, we used to go like hardcore, like back and forth, like basically what like Eric and I and like Maddox do now. Like, what's the right route? What could I have done differently there? There's several play lines that like this will affect this outcome like later in the game. We used to go over that a lot. So like that was like kind of coaching, but like not a paid thing where I have somebody sit down and explain, you know, something to me. It was more like bouncing the correct solutions off each other and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's a big one. Coaching doesn't have to always be paid for, right? You can literally just get coaching by asking Maddox how to play MuVMax, or exactly. You know, like there's so many like ways just to get free coaching, and there's so many resources out there. I think coaching is great. You know, I've been through a couple of sessions. You know, I played Palkia for a couple of tournaments. You know, you want to get better at playing Palkia, make sure you're building the deck right, talk to the best Palkia player, right? And that's what you do. So but yeah, that's gonna wrap it up for our Teach by the Beach episode 2, prepping for a competitive tournament. So to recap, you know, make sure you outwork your opponents and you're, you know, you really kind of put your heart into it when you're ready to get better. Check out some of the resources that we align. Limitless is one of the best ones, but we'll have all the links in the descriptions for those resources below in the YouTube. Think about your opponents, what they're playing, and what kind of meta game decisions you can make. with your deck and maybe change your deck choice based off of maybe it's a better deck to play at your locals. You know, deck build to account for the metagaming. You know, again, just net decking is encouraged. Start there. But once you do that, net decking is not enough. You have to know your matchup. So get in there and practice that deck. Use Max's four steps. You know, how does your deck operate? Learn your deck. Learn how your opponents like to operate their deck. Figure out your prize map. How do you take six prizes? How does your opponent take in six prizes? And then what ways can you alter those prize maps to disrupt your opponent or, you know, even accelerate yours? And then last but not least, you know, get coaching, talk to your friends, sign up for coaching. Metafy is a great resource. There's a lot of group classes now. I also like the group classes. So, you know, kind of look out there for those. But yeah, that's our Teach by the Beach episode 2. Hope you guys enjoyed that. It was a lot of fun. But next, we'll get ready to talk about Special Event Utrecht and the results that happened last weekend. But first, this podcast was brought to you by Nakama Anime Cafe. We had our League Cup last weekend. Maddox, you got top four. Congratulations.
Thank you.
On that. And next week on Wednesday, March 13th, we will have our pre-release event at Nakama. If you are ready to come get some pre-release promos, get your hand on some new cards before the official set release in 2 weeks, you can do that at Nakama Anime Cafe next Wednesday. Join us at 6:30 p.m. Come build your 40-card deck against us and have some fun. Get your hands on some new cards.
Pay $5 for Buddy Puffin.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll go ahead and share my screen. We'll start talking about the Utrecht results for the special event last weekend in Utrecht. That's in Netherlands. And Owen did it again. Got another win this season. Man's on a tear. Not with Chen Pao this time, but Fusion Mew. Maddox must have been at home jumping for joy to see that. Maddox, how are you feeling about Fusion Mew right now?
I mean, again, this is just a case of a solid deck with a incredible pilot who is just on a tear, right? Back-to-back major wins in Europe, you know, fantastic performance by him. I mean, really, you know, Fusion Mew just remains to be one of those solid decks. You have all of the high, you know, strong hitting power of Mew VMAX plus the donk potential with Meloetta and Ice Q even. In this specific list, again, just really strong list. You know, it falls in and out of favor, just kind of between as events go of whether, you know, Mew is going to do well or not do well. I do think in this case, you know, Mew is due. Mew does very well in Europe. And again, Owen is a fantastic pilot who took a very solid, just straightforward Fusion Mew list and had a nice deep run. So congratulations to him.
Mew.
Yeah. Mew EU, man. Every time you go to Europe, somehow Europe finds a way to get Mew a win. But surprisingly, Maddox, it won against Moon in the finals. Does that shock you at all? Or not?
I mean, not really. Again, you know, from someone who has played the matchup a lot, and it's a matchup you need to know because it can get very scary. You know, there are lots of opportunities here to, you know, disrupt what Roaring Moon is trying to do, right? In a perfect world, they're taking two knockouts to win the game. By being able to mix in the Meloetta, it does give you some options to help disrupt that prize trade and take some knockouts in a, you know, kind of with a single prizer, force them to take three knockouts, you go Meloetta, Mew VMAX type of thing. Also, you know, including copies of Path and Iona in his list, really with the goal of disrupting and, you know, preventing the Roaring Moon player from setting up their third attacker to basically win the game. And if you watch back that series, you know, Owen was able to do that, capitalize on some early aggression with Meloetta, and ultimately just stop what Roaring Moon was trying to do. So,
yeah, looking at some other results here, Tord Rekloff does it again, best player in Europe. I mean, Owen's maybe battling for that this year, but best player in Europe, hands down.
Here, open this one as an image.
Yeah.
There's a lot. Well, zoom out a little bit. There you go.
All right. We have what? 53 one-ofs or
35? 35 one-ofs. I mean, everyone who can't see, right? Tord Rekloff played an amazing concoction of a deck. You know, really, it's called a Charizard EX deck. It plays a 2-1. It plays a 2-0-2 Charizard EX line, but Barrel, Pidgeot EX. It plays a Rapid Strike Urshifu, plus a quick shooting Inteleon, Medicham V. There's just so many ridiculous cards in here. But hey, Tord really put a list together and made it work for him and end up with the top four.
Yeah, I mean, the Thornton, you think, oh, he doesn't get a Charmander down turn one, chilling. And then turn two, Thornton, you know, Ultra Ball Thornton.
Turns the Rotom into a... Oh, my God.
Like, it's kind of crazy what you can do with the Thornton. And even the Palpad to do it again later, because two Palpads. This list is wild. I don't know, you know, what his inspiration was. Was it just a metagame call or just wanted to play, like, a bunch of the cards that are about to rotate? You know, who knows?
The big news about this list is that it includes one card from every main release set since, and
except
that is legal in this format.
Fates, right? Except for Fates.
Yeah. Probably in Fates, but that had some re-releases. So I could say, like, oh, his Iona's are from
Fates. Yeah,
that's Squawkabilly's from
Fates, Trust. Yeah.
Parker, what do you think about the list when you look at it? Is this something that intrigues you to pick up and play, or is this like, there's no way I'm playing this?
So I wouldn't play it to a major. Would I play it to League? Maybe. It's definitely looks fun. It's definitely like kind of a challenge. Just finding out all the lines. I'm sure we'll see at least one person with it at League on Thursday. But
like, if I were to play this at League, I'm literally having a piece of paper with the written deck list just so I remember what is even in the deck.
Yeah.
Like, what can I do here? Like, oh, I play a Raihan. Oh, it's prize. Okay, never mind. Yeah.
No, you just play Heavy Ball so that way you can check your prizes.
Yeah, there you go. Play Peonia to check half of your prizes.
Half your prizes. Yeah, so interesting results there. Look at the rest of the top eight. You know, a bunch of the kind of standard stuff. Nothing really crazy here. Got a Moon. Got another two other Charizards. A Pidgeot. Snorlax Pidgeot box. Chenpao. You know, a bunch of the same. One of the key things here is some Gardevoirs on the outside looking in. Got three Gardevoirs at 9th, 10th, and 11th.
I don't know if they bubbled or if they was just like clean cut.
I think
out.
It was a clean cut. We can validate that.
Yes, we can. Using Pokestats.live.
Yeah, so this tournament. Let's go to standings. Looks like it was a bubble. Yeah, there was four people bubbled out, or three people bubbled out.
34 points.
All the Gardevoirs had worse resistance and didn't make it in.
Unfortunate.
Yeah, unfortunate for the Gardevoir players.
I do think with Utrecht, sorry, just going back to the top, I mean, Roaring Moon jumping all the way to the finals appearance, right? That's the top performance we've seen of it so far. Again, a deck that's really been due and that has just become even more and more optimized. And I mean, really, Moon had a chance to take this all home. Props to Filippo for piloting it very, very well, getting into finals. Any Roaring Moon champions out there are celebrating its success. And there's a few more major events. Maybe Roaring Moon will finally get his win before rotation. Who knows?
Maybe. Yeah.
There's some people even calling it like the best deck right now.
It was the most popular deck day one, right? And that's kind of wild.
Yes,
so,
it was.
You know, you look at that and we go back to statistics here.
Something we've been saying on the podcast.
Day two, it was the second most popular deck. So tied with Charizard. So seemed to do okay. Converted decently. Guys, something shocking here. Reggie's is back, baby. Got Reggie's back in day two. That Regice getting Lost City'd, you're done, son.
Nah, no one plays Lost City, trust.
That's a thing of the past.
Yeah, so I mean, just pretty standard Reggie list. Someone decided to pick it up, it looks like, and piloted it to a good finish, you know, top 64.
Shout out to Chris. They went 7-1-1 day one.
Yeah.
Hit zero Charizard.
Hey.
What do you do against Charizard?
You just lose.
You use bad Drago into good Drago, and you just keep doing that. And then you hope you win somehow.
And then you get Sablezard, and you're just like, all right, well, I lose. Where's the Blastoise deck? I know the Blastoise made day two. Where is
it? Palkia Blastoise. I saw that it made its debut.
Here it
earlier.
Is. Here it is. Yeah. Here it is. Here it is. All right.
Boss. Boom. Blastoise EX. True legend.
Blastoise
so many
EX.
Legends out here in Europe. Shout out to you all.
Yeah. So who is this that played this? Did you say the name?
It's Boss.
Boss Ravan.
His name's Boss. Oh, Boss.
Yes. So this War Turtle is the only card from this tournament to get a new Limitless page this weekend.
Wait, Blastoise had a Limitless page?
Yeah, Blastoise did have a Limitless page. Not sure from who.
Alex.
Alex
and Malaysia.
Malaysia.
Wait, what? They got top 16? Palk Blastoise? Whoa.
Yo, is this the new Palk?
See, this is the great part about Limitless. You can just dive into rabbit holes. And just following cards, following lists. I've gotten lost in them. We're getting lost in the one live on the Beach Court podcast. Again, retweet if you're watching us on Twitter.
Double Barrel. I love this list because of Double Barrel.
Oh, you know, Vessel came out. You know, it's like, you know.
Yeah. Vessel came out. No, play Superior Energy Retrievals.
Might be something there.
I mean, Maridon, if it dies off a little bit, maybe this is next format cooking already. I mean, I'll get in the lab. You know I'm testing for alligators, so maybe this is better. Probably not, but we'll see. So yeah, let's see if there's any other special spicy decks. Arc Superior made day two.
Oh, it's like a dedicated Superior deck.
Yeah, 2/2 with a Radiant Alakazam. Well, you know, whatever. You beat Charizard a little bit, I guess. Smack him up. What else we got? Anything cool?
There's Cloth Goldango.
Cloth Goldango.
Yo,
it's all,
wait a
all
minute.
Looking pretty solid.
We got Valiant Urshifu.
Ooh. Toy Catchers. Two counts.
Yes, sir.
Two counts of Toy Catcher.
Toy Catcher. Absolutely love it. I mean, I love it. That's really good. All right. Anything else to call out for Utrecht?
No, not particularly, I guess.
It's just exciting to see more and more events. Another regional this weekend, and then Vancouver coming up here real soon.
Yeah, yeah. One step closer to Europe, baby.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's move to the last segment of the podcast. Look at some City League decks. So, again, we're on Limitless here. If you're following along on YouTube, we are on the tournaments page. You can click on City Leagues, and here is all the tournament results from Japan. Again, Japanese, these events are usually 64 players, and we have access to 16 lists from each event. I see some common denominators here. I see some Tinas, whether it be Lost Tina or Arc Tina, and I see some Lugias.
What is Bax Caliber Barbarrel? Is that any different from Chen Pao?
I think it's just Chen Pao.
It's just
so
Chen Pao.
Robin did say that there's some pieces, basically how it's like auto-generating the sprites. It's not like a perfect logic, but it is a Chen Pao deck.
No. Yeah, because there's more Bax Calibers than Chen Pao's in that. It makes sense.
I think one of the key things to take away here is, you know, there's what, two on this first page, there's only two Zards, right? So Zards are having a tough time pulling out the win. I'm sure they're still, you click in some of these tournaments, you'll see some Zards here because it's a consistent
two
deck.
In top four.
Oh, yeah, there's
two, yeah, four
five in top 16.
Yeah. What's that comfy list? With no
one, Raging Bolt.
Wait, Lost Zone Raging Bolt. Wait, hold on. Wait, go back to that one.
Yeah, Lost Zone Raging Bolt's actually doing well. Jackson played this deck this week against me, and it's actually not bad. I don't mind it at all. It works pretty well.
Neat.
Yeah, it is a neat deck. I mean, I don't think Raging Bolt by itself is very good. So I think this is probably its best home that I've seen. I don't really know if the Fluttermane's worth it, though.
Doesn't seem like it, honestly, but yeah. I could be totally wrong.
Yeah, the Slitherwing to KO Iron Hands is good. Your Iron Hands are your own. There's so many cool things with this deck that I like. One of the things I did want to point out that if I can find the list, where was it we saw this? Maddox. Where's the future boxes?
Oh, there's there's one right there.
Has it right. A lot of the future boxes right now are playing this Iron Boulder EX. And we seem to think it's because Arceus is seeing some play. So I know we've got some ARC friends that listen to the podcast. Beware, Iron Boulder's coming for you. So, you know, we're going to attach two energy, attach a booster capsule, bench a couple crowns. That arc is dead. And if you don't have a Tina, you're not KO me back because it's 240 HP. So
ouch.
Good luck with that. Let me know how it goes for you. But arc players, beware. Iron Boulder is coming through. This is actually, what do they call this? What's the actual name of this thing?
Iron Boulder. Brachian. Yes.
What is it? Brachian?
Terrakion.
Oh, Terrakion. Oh, okay.
Terrakion. Well, that's like the original from Unova. Shout out to Pokemon Legends ZA. The iron future versions of it. We got Iron Crown. We got Iron Leaves. All the fun stuff.
We got Goodra making an appearance, getting the first place at a league.
That's what I'm talking about. That's, you know, the good stuff.
Maddox loves him some Goodra. He loves some gooey, ooey, ooey.
No, wait, don't say it like
you
that.
Say it like the bro.
No.
Oh, why did you say it like that?
I mean, some of the cool things I like about this list is playing the Crisis Punch.
Yo, right? Don't change the subject now.
Anyone who had to listen to Eric say that, apologize. If you have children at home, it's fine. Next episode, we will not say the GG phrase.
Anyways, one of the really cool cards lately that I've been seeing pop up on a lot of lists and should get some hype is this Iron Bundle. We lose Escape Rope. I'm seeing, especially these hands lists, we're playing the bundle. The bundle, like, against you, Parker, last night, won me a couple of games. You know, and the bundle's just very good. So get your reverse holo bundles, have them ready. I think that was even a promo card, so you can probably have some promos. This was like it's only a 10th place list, but we do have a Bond Suite Serena EX list here that makes top 16. So Todd, if you're listening, I know you love this deck. Here's a build for next format. Pretty close.
I didn't even know Panic Mask. I didn't even realize that card was still in format.
Yeah, it doesn't rotate, baby. It's Lost Origin.
Oh, a Lunarok deck got 10th at one of these.
I saw that. I did. Which one is that one?
Just say the Japanese City name Lee of the Chiba. Store.
Chiba?
Oh, Susaya.
Susaya? What?
The third one, yeah. In the Chiba Prefecture, bro.
There we go.
You were there, bro. How you forget?
Shut up, bro. Solrock, baby. This is pretty standard, though. Nothing really special about this.
Hey, it's got everything
you need.
You
have Vessel now, but no Greninja.
Yeah,
hey, then if you missed Scoop Up Net, we got Penny.
Yes.
Place one copy of Penny, which honestly...
Penny Palpad?
You need one way to play soft head.
Yeah.
You need an extra energy? Penny.
I mean, that works. Yeah, I mean, these are just some cool decks to highlight here. Some expected results. Get out here, dive. Use the resources that we've taught you earlier in the episode. Dive into this. You know, just get yourself ready for the next format. Just like we are. Those of you in Jacksonville, we've been testing every Monday. Come out and join us. We'll be at Cool Stuff or the other place we go to, but we've been going to Cool Stuff mostly. But yeah, that's the episode, guys. Anything else?
No, I think that pretty much wraps it up. I'm just looking at some cool Japan decks right now.
But yeah, come see us at Nakama next week for the pre-release on Wednesday. And if you're at the Georgia Cup this weekend, sorry, but you can't win it because me and Max are going to scoop and, you know, we're going to be in finals. But good luck to, you know, the rest of the top eight. We're rooting for you, except for versus us. But that's gonna be it for this episode of the Beach Court Podcast. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Please like, comment, and subscribe below. If you have any questions about anything that we went over today in today's episode, please don't hesitate to leave a comment. And we will see you next time.